Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Monday, the 6th of February, recording at 9:10 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first the highlights in here of the day. Among the Asian stock markets, the end of the Chinese New Year led to some sharp upward dynamics by three of the recent laggards, and in descending order of the strength of the signal. Those were Taiwan, I only looked at the Shanghai A-Share Index, but that was very strong, and also Malaysia, another laggard recently. And interesting, India pushed up quite strongly, good upward dynamic today, retracing the little gradual decline that we'd seen over the last 3 or 4 days, to retest those psychological resistance levels at 10,000 for the Sensex index and at 3,000 for the Indian Nifty index. Government bonds, quiet day in here today, but we had some good rebounds on Friday. Now, bonds had been sliding, and those rebounds, which included an upward dynamic for several of them, and a upside key day reversal for the U.S. 30-year Treasury bonds, that has checked the slide that we have seen overall. Now, that could buy a little bit of more time in here for stock markets, but more on that later. Elsewhere, the dollar strong again today. Precious metals toing and froing. Here, small losses, but most off the day's lows. And natural gas, that's becoming an expensive embarrassment. It got hit in here again today. Okay, and more on that in a moment. Now, first, the stock market cycle. At an intuitive level, backed by a little bit of technical evidence involving momentum, but nothing really concrete. I'm feeling nervous here, and I know a couple of the main reasons why I'm feeling nervous. The fact that this market is in the 34th month of its rally, and that's a bit exceptional to see a period much longer than that without at least a 10% correction by some large stock market indices, which would mean a bigger percentage reactions by most emerging markets. So that's unusual. And also, it's against this background of the second year of the presidential election cycle, historically not so hot. It also is against the background of further rises in short-term interest rates, although I appreciate that these are not historically high, especially in real terms, if we overlook the sort of hedonic stuff that's coming out on inflation figures reported by the government, the U.S. government. And other concerns here, oil, although quiet in here today, just under $65, but there's scope for a little bit more of a problem there, certainly if we see the Katrina highs taken out. So I've got lots of reasons to be nervous. And then we had the recent slide that I'd mentioned in the U.S. Treasury bonds, although those have picked up as of Friday. Friday's gains held today. But again, to repeat this point, there's nothing that really is ringing the alarm bells. So it's more of an intuitive feeling than anything else. And I'll add one more, gravity. Some of the gains that we've seen over the last 34 months have been phenomenal, particularly for some of the emerging market indices. So I'd be careful in here today. I would be fairly reluctant to put new money in the markets unless I was doing so in one of the areas that had not performed previously that I really do like. And I can mention Taiwan again. I can mention China, where I bought the Atlantis China Fortune Fund, and not very long ago. And I can mention also Inco, which is a share that's only broken out recently that I like a great deal. But most of the things that I have, I'm just hoping I can squeak out a little bit further gain. My big speculative position, for instance, the Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust, it hasn't done anything wrong in here, but I'm pleasantly surprised, not to say very pleasantly surprised, with the extent of the gains that I've seen so far. I mean, markets are full of surprises, and that doesn't mean that I won't be surprised further. And usually, the best thing to do in a situation like this is not to come to some sort of arbitrary decision that it's reached a top or gone far enough, but just to follow it up with trailing stops, as I'm doing. And I'm also a big believer in the school that says, well, this is an original from the chart seminar, and I've been mentioning this for at least 30 years, that a consistent trend is still a trend in motion. I'll just say that one more time, that a consistent trend, an orderly consistent trend, is still a trend in motion. In other words, if it's consistent and orderly, we can ask ourselves the behavioral question, has anything happened to make all the boys and girls who have been fueling that trend, has anything happened to make them jump out? And if the trend is still consistent and orderly, the answer has to be no. But again, as I've said, that with a few exceptions, I do not regard this at all as an optimum time to be putting new money in markets. I think it's a time to be looking at the portfolio and saying, what am I a bit concerned about here? And then you can put in trailing stops, either actual or mental. And another question to ask is, what would I be willing to hold on to throughout a 3 to 6 month stock market correction in here? And for me, I don't want to be holding on to leveraged long positions, and I have some. MLW, which I just mentioned, being the biggest one. I will almost certainly hold on to my core investment positions, although I don't have any doubt that if we were to see a significant correction, that I would regret not having taken the bolder step of lightening those positions. So why not go ahead and lighten them anyway? Well, because I've been nervous far more times than we've seen significant corrections. So had I jumped out of India, for instance, there where I have the JP Morgan India Trust. If I jumped out of that the first time, I became nervous because I thought it had run a little bit too far. Well, I would have sold ages ago, and ditto with the Investec Global Energy Fund, another one of my core positions. So I'm hoping I'm not going to worry overly about those, and I've pretty well decided that I'm not going to try to fine-tune those in terms of timing. In other words, I'm not going to try to exit quickly as markets start to weaken in the hopes of being able to buy those positions back at a lower level. Say it's tempting, and when I say I pretty well decided not to do it, I know it's a good idea never to say never in here. So I will give myself the option to do that, but I kind of hope I don't. So let's just continue to watch those January reaction lows for stock market indices. Of the ones that I would regard as analytically important, the one that's given way is the NASDAQ 100 index, and the S&P is sitting right on that January reaction low. Now, why is the NASDAQ 100 led? And incidentally, the NASDAQ indices usually go together. There's also the NASDAQ composite, which has more components. That has not broken. I better just check that to make sure I'm not telling a fib. And let's put that up on the screen. Excuse me for the delay here. No, it's a little bit up above, a little bit above it. So why has the NASDAQ 100 gone and not the composite, which would have more smaller companies in it? And the answer is that Google is a big weighting in the NASDAQ 100 index. Has a bigger weighting in the 100 than it would in the composite, where there's more dilution due to the greater number of companies. But Google has certainly been a speculator's bellwether stock in this cycle. While Google kept going up, all things seemed possible, didn't they? As far as a leading tech company and speculation in NASDAQ-type stocks were concerned. Now, moving on, I did mention that I felt that the upper dynamics that we saw on Friday for a number of those global bond markets pulled them back from the brink of some serious technical deterioration, and it was the JGBs, Japanese government bonds, that got closest to giving that negative signal, although that would not have the same sort of emotional impact because everybody knows that Japanese long-term rates are going to go up and nobody's going to worry about it all that much. But if you start getting 30-year treasury, 10-year treasury yields moving up, then that really is going to worry people about the US housing market. So again, that rally on Friday may have bought a little bit more time in here for Wall Street, but it's finely balanced in here as you know. When I net it all out, the balance of evidence still favors the bulls in the short term. So my best case scenario that we get well through the or mostly through the first quarter of this year before running into trouble is still in the cards. And of course, if I'm much too cautious here, and certainly some of the Wall Street cheerleaders would think so. I think there was a real nervous Nelly for dithering about some of the gains that we've seen so far. If I'm much too cautious, I have absolutely no doubt as to what the reason would be, and that is that booming money supply. And it's M3, but it's not just M3, it's everybody's money supply is absolutely surging. So you got all that liquidity sloshing around the system here, and that's what could be different this time in terms of a 34-month and counting stock market rally. Okay, looking at the US dollar. Now, I'm still of the view that the dollar index peaked in November and that that's an important peak and that we are going to be ranging, and I have emphasized this word ranging lower, but I mentioned that the interest rate differentials still favor the US dollar overall. And technically, the dollar has broken the downtrend ranging consistency, such as it was of lower highs and lower lows that we saw since November until a week or so ago. So we've got this technical rally taking place here in the US dollar, and as I mentioned in today's comment, it does require a downward dynamic here to check that move. Currencies, I think, are a nightmare to trade here right now because no country wants a strong currency, as I've said so many times before, and the evidence of that is in the amount of ranging that we see, and this has confused currency traders as much as anyone else. And it's really hard to get it right because by the you know you get a couple of good dynamic signals or s that one feels are important and perhaps the beginning of a trend that might actually last a few weeks perhaps, and it's just about all over. So it's a whipsaw type of environment in here, and I'm relieved not to be trying to trade any of these currencies right now. But I do have some not insignificant precious metals positions, And while they're all protected within the money trailing stops, the metals are needing a breather here after some of the very good moves that we've actually seen. We've got palladium consolidating above $300. We've got silver, which has that psychological barrier at $10, and that's also got some gains to consolidate. And we also have gold, which had seen the pretty powerful run from September onwards, consolidating or encountering some resistance, depending on which way you look at it, here in this mid-570 region. So, against that background, it wouldn't take too much to trigger stops, create a bit of a shakeout in the market. My view overall is that these metals are still cheap, and let's take gold, for instance, that, as I've said over and over again, you get any downward reaction of $30 or more, and that's accumulation territory. I have been buying and would continue to buy on breaks of that magnitude. The question in the short term is, do we go higher in here before we react? And I don't have a strong feel for that. I think it's pretty finely balanced. And if the dollar continues to strengthen, that would be a bit of a headwind for the precious metals, although not a huge one in the sense that this has become much more of a global interest rather than just a dollar play. Now, also, the industrial metals are pretty firm overall, though here also we've seen some very, very big gains. But copper pushed up and hit another new high in here today. People have been issuing sell signals for 2 years or more on copper, saying that it can't maintain this move. Fortunately, not here at Fuller Money, and that trend just continues higher. If it follows through again on the upside tomorrow, I will certainly raise my in the money stops a little bit further, although I don't want to crowd the position overly, because they don't go up every day, as we all know. Or if they do go up every start going up every day, that's when I really will jam the stops up tight, because if you get a clear acceleration coming on top of what has already been a very persistent trend, that is climactic. And the market will be the strongest thing until the day it stops, and then it'll become the weakest virtually. Well, can do it overnight. Okay, energy. We had that downward reaction by the oil price last week, but then starting to steady up again on Friday. The natural gas, that's the embarrassment of the portfolio here. I think it's my only red ink, and I know it's my only red ink in the portfolio, and it's a lot of red ink here, down under $8 in here today in the March contract. Now, the reason apparently for this, and I have had some articles through to mentioning this, is that supplies, our current reserves, stockpiles, are relatively high, and that's not least because of the warm weather that they've had in the United States. But that has turned cooler, although that hasn't helped the natural gas price in here yet. Overall, while I don't like it, I don't like losing money on an open position, and maybe I've gone back to this well one time too many here in terms of natural gas. But the lesson overall in terms of industrial sources for a very, very long time is that you buy the setbacks. And that's something that I've certainly profited from a lot in the last 3 years. It can feel pretty hairy, pretty masochistic when you see the red ink in the portfolio. But I'm going to be stubborn in here and sit with this one for a little bit longer. Fortunately, I haven't leveraged it up too much. And I think that's pretty much it, folks. So again, all the best.